Hello, everybody, and welcome to this edition of the ASI Cast. And I'm delighted to say that today we're joined by Karen Nelson Field, variously described as the inventor of, godmother of, what other title you could think of the whole attention measurement business industry, I should say. So hi, Karen, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Not at all. So let's start then. I mean, Karen, you have a new book coming out, I know. Although I gather it's been delayed a little bit, but anyway, that's nothing to do with you. It's publishers for you. And I believe it's called The Attention Economy, a Category Blueprint. And I would imagine that what you're doing in that is reflecting on the whole topic of measuring attention and how it's moved on since you first raised this, you goodness knows, 12, 15 years ago or whatever it was. So I wondered whether or not you could describe a little bit about how you see the current state of play, how you see things moving, and how you think they've moved on since you first started on this journey.
Yeah, look, you're correct. You know, the first book was only 4 years ago, but it does seem like it was a lot longer. So this book is essentially explaining the research that I've done that kind of dives much more deep into the patterns that we see in human attention data and how that can affect prediction. So this book kind of talks about things like big little learnings and all the things that I've learned, and some of it I've disproven from the first book and some of it is just extending it. But then it talks, as I said, to systematic patterns, and I call it attention science, and how that then can evolve an ecosystem that, you know, kind of revolves around four sort of main product types, which I call the Fab Four. So it's very much about, this is where it's going. This is the kind of data flow that we're going to see. And this is the kind of rules around data quality that we need to build longevity in an ecosystem for the next 20 years. So it was a passion project, this book. And, you know, it's been a long time coming for me, because I think this is definitely a category blueprint / a line in the sand around, right, we know enough now to know how this can work and how this can be successful for brands.
It's interesting you're describing it as like a sort of line in the sand. So do you think we've actually got to a point where we have enough data and enough knowledge and information and perspective now to be able to sort of look back and say, okay, we've arrived somewhere? Is that what you mean by that?
100%. So, you know, we've had this conversation before. So how we collect data is via camera. You know, the sample size for us is close to 2 million humans. That's sample plus impressions and data. So data is probably sitting, so individual data bits is around 2.5 billion human data points. So there's so much there from something like 15 or 16 countries across 7 years. It's enough for us to use to build really fantastic ground truth models to then scale across, you know, the next phase, which will be prediction and AI. So 100%, that's what I'm saying. There's enough there. And we see such systematic sameness now across all the different conditions that we test, which, you know, more than anyone, when you start to see that, that's what prediction means. You know, we've done enough replication extension. So I am categorically telling you there is a way forward for something that otherwise most people think is quite unique to each individual that we can apply in measurement and workflow. So yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah, it's an important moment, isn't it, then? Because you're saying, in fact, you've built a predictive, you've got the data now to be able to build predictive tools, as opposed to what I suppose some people would see as almost like a kind of, almost not exactly random, but a sort of a multivariable type series of events that happen around how people pay attention to what they're looking at.
Well, it still does. I mean, it's proper machine learning, so it's not just, you know, simple algorithms, but there's some randomness, but there's also enough non-randomness for us to be able to kind of predict the model. So my point was that, and there are differences across different formats and different platforms, so you can't just use the size of the ad or, you know, how where it sort of sits on the page, and then go, I can build attention units. You have each format and each, platform and even each device, the nature of the order of those features changes. So that's what's random, but also predictables. But so my point is, it's still complicated, but using the kind of data and the scale of the data that we have with proper machine learning models, the importance of the weighting factors gets applied, and it then predicts active, passive, and inattention. So yeah, it's proper machine learning. It's not math, basic math.
I mean, you've always been very big on actually getting your data into the hands of people who are using it, to practitioners, be they in advertisers or indeed in agencies. And what you've always tried to do, from my experience of working with you, is you've always been very focused on delivering to their needs, as it were. So giving them something they can actually use and something they can make practical decisions from, as opposed to just some sort of academic exercise, as it were. When you look around you now and you look at what people are actually doing with what we might as well call your data, are you impressed with the way in which people are using it? Are you happy with the way people are using it? Or do you think that there's a long way to go before people actually get the most out of it?
Look, yes, there's two sets of people, some that have been part of the journey for a lot of years that get it and understand how to adjust existing workflows and existing reach points. There are others that are still testing. Without kind of calling it out today, I've actually recently been working on an ultimate, let's just say, universal metric that will game change. So I'm going to relaunch it at CES in the new year, but I've got a little bit more work to do to make it si simply universal across. So seconds is great, but a lot of the thing with attention seconds is many don't understand how to use them. So we've been talking to them for many years about how to do that, but I've worked out a way to incorporate seconds and reach. So that I will talk about maybe on private to you and then on another podcast. But the point being, it's still an evolution. So there's still work to be done around more simplistic ways, also I should say probably simple ways to put this into workflows to make it even easier for people. And with the notification around the MRC stepping in with standards, I think it's a really important time to do that.
I mean, you're very supportive of the MRC and the standards work that's being done by them and others, aren't you? I mean, it is essential to get these things well defined, and so everyone knows
Look, I
what.
think it's going to put a line in the sand between, quality metrics, which are based typically not on attention metrics, but more on outcomes, versus attention vendors. And we've had this conversation before. So I think that's where it's going to go. But I'm very supportive of it because, for the MRC to be involved says it's important and it's on most brands, bucket list to do. So I feel like, and I might have said it, on LinkedIn a few weeks ago, that that was kind of the day I went, right, I can retire now because I've done my job, that I've got it from nothing to, being considered by MRC. So I'm quite grateful for, Anjing of IAB and John Watts and Sim, and the Attention Council's been good too. So we're getting there.
You're getting there. I mean, well, there's a lot of work being done by all kinds of people in all kinds of places. So you would hope that things are sort of moving along. I mean, do you, as you're looking at it now, I mean, do you see sort of new use cases emerging? I mean, I don't know what it might be. It could be maybe understanding attention and how it affects scheduling, for example, and something more used, let's say, to content creators, how attention
Definitely.
peaks and drops. I mean, do you see that kind of thing?
Yeah, definitely. And we're kind of working towards that ourselves, and this is not new news. So given we're a true machine learning business, our stack has the capability to kind of overlay other models that can add value to content creation and stuff like that. So we've already overlaid context and emotion AI, and that's kind of where we're headed. Probably not today, but the prediction piece, which takes a piece of creative and can adjust it or can kind of talk to where it should be and what format, what platform for best performance, all sorts of things like that.
What about actually making programs? For example, we're talking about old-fashioned world of TV. I mean, making shows. I mean, there must be a way in which, the way that attention moves throughout the period of a show being aired.
I've said that to networks many times because, the amount of money they do all of these pilots, and then they get their kind of audience ratings and go forward, and I'm sure they have success, but I've said that a lot of times. You could run this kind of I guess models through in advance of it being launched to the network and get a really good handle on what to expect and then price accordingly, right? So, do dynamic pricing around the nature of the attention profile essentially. So yeah, not really in my wheelhouse today, but I've said that to networks before.
Well, what's been the reaction to that? Because I would have thought that was a really good idea. I mean, if I was a network, I think I'd want to know how audiences flow throughout my
Yeah, look, the
show.
reaction is we operate on the research and insight side, so we're less on the programming side. So, what I have learned in this industry is that the two worlds are very siloed. I mean, we see that now, and I think one of the biggest lessons I'm trying to impart with all of the people we work with and all of the agencies we work with is remove the silos from creative to media. And I think you and I have had conversations about that because it's interesting how so much of the inefficiency is because of the silo. But that works in the same way in TV programming. So, but we work on, more the measurement insights analytics side than the programming creative, art side.
I mean, just looking at the whole attention sort of ecosystem, as it were, from above, it does look like there's an awful lot of room for expansion. I mean, there's all sorts of areas you could move into. I mean, there's I know that your company has looked at a lot of other channels, but there are forever more channels, and there's also more channels that you could do more with, I would imagine.
This
Is
whole idea of attention can transcend marketing and move to many other ecosystems, to be quite frank.
Yeah.
So I think, at the end of the day, attention economics is born from the study of inattention in many ecosystems, and it's the cause consequence. Sorry, it's the cause consequence and the course correction. So I often talk about, the study of inattention in driving is a thing. That's attention economics. The study of inattention in education is a thing. That's attention economics. We just pick it up from a marketing perspective to make, ads more effective and efficient. But the reality is, the study of inattention can impact so many other ecosystems.
Yeah, I mean, do you see yourself getting involved in that as a
Mate,
business?
I think I've had too many birthdays to...
Oh, really? Well, yeah, but it's,
Yeah.
your company has got people in it, of course, who haven't had
Yeah.
many birthdays at
Yeah,
least.
look, the short answer is the technology is so rigorous that, even long after I'm gone from the play probably, because it's technology that can extract, data around how humans interact with different stimuli, and you can apply that in any way. So 100%. So our tech is worth, I mean, I know how many millions of dollars we've invested in it. So I think, yes, it could be probably
It
just too
could be.
many birthdays from my side.
But it's been, I mean, the point is that you've set it up in such a way that it can be
Absolutely.
expanded into other non-marketing related areas,
Correct.
into all kinds
Correct.
of different, so it's flexible enough to be able to do
Definitely.
that quite apart from just within our little
Yep.
universe,
Yep.
having a few more channels here and there, or looking at out of home, or looking at cinema, or looking at audio, or any of those things. I mean, I'd imagine that's something you must have
We've
your eye
already done those three
on.
things. Yeah. So we do audio, sorry, we do outdoor in real time in outdoor like bus shelters and big form. And in fact, I met at South by Southwest Sydney speaking about it. So and we've done audio and we've done cinema but yeah, you're talking even broader than that.
Exactly. And you could do again, you've got the capacity to be able to do all those things. It's just a sort of limitless canvas that you've got ready, isn't
Yeah, I
it?
mean, the only thing that has to change is the models have to be adapted to the proximity of the camera systems. But that's how we do it now. So, if we're building a new model for outdoor, for example, the math has to change because the camera is 50 meters away, compared to what it is now, which is what, half a meter, if that. So it worked the same way if it was at the, I mean, this is, privacy concerning, but if it was at the front of a classroom, it'd have to be adjusted. If it was in a car, it'd have to be adjusted, et cetera.
But the principle is the same, as you say, with the privacy matters obviously need to be addressed. But okay. Well, look, Karen, this is great, and it's very exciting news that you'll be appearing at the ASI event in Venice in next month, isn't it? Goodness, time moves on. So
Does.
we're all very much looking forward to continuing the conversation there. And thank you very much for joining us on this podcast.
Look forward to seeing you.
Yeah, you too.